The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Frenzy time. Middle of March means free agency has begun. There are now multiple layers, as you know, from the last couple of years to the free agency period. This is, I guess, the quote unquote legal tampering where teams can create the templates and put contracts in place, agree to terms, and then put pen to paper in a couple of days. And we're going to talk about a lot of different stuff with the Cincinnati Bengals, stuff going around the NFL, and we're going to take some questions as well. We'll be here for just a little while talking about all kinds of things. The Bengals had some good news come their way, some bad news come their way, some expected stuff, some not expected stuff, and we're going to talk about it. I'm Anthony Cosenza. He's John Sheeran, fresh from his new post at A to Z Sports, writing some stuff and getting the news out there, so go check out A to Z Sports. Of course, also check out Cincy Jungle as well. John, happy Monday to you, man. We don't get to chat very often on a Monday, but it's good to see your fresh Monday face, my friend.
I don't know if it's fresh anymore. It feels like I've been up for 18 hours at this point, but that's how life goes, covering free agency in the NFL, as we both know. But yeah, it's been a busy day covering the Bengals. I know a lot of people think that there's not that much to cover when it comes to the Cincinnati Bengals, but plenty has happened. Plenty has happened around the league, and plenty is still more to come, I guess.
Plenty is still more to come. And look, I mean, I know this is hard for me to say because I used to be Mr. Panic Button day one. Bengals get frustrated. Where are the outside signings? How are you bettering your team? How are you better? Well, you know, I've kind of backed off that these past couple of years because the Bengals have really been right there. And of course, they've made splashy signings the past few years, so I haven't really had much to complain about. So I'm playing a little bit more of a waiting game myself at this point in time, although I haven't been overly, I guess, enamored with a lot of different things I saw and heard today. But we knew that the activity was going to be high. We knew that Bengals players were going to have interest, not only because of their own individual talent, but the team having a lot of success. And that is what has come to fruition. I don't know if we want to – do we want to go – chronologically with stuff we learned, John? Do we want to just kind of say, just get to topics as they come to them? I'll let you decide, but we can talk about a lot of the different things with the Bengals right now as we know it.
Well, let's just run through what's happened in chronological order. I guess going back to them re-signing, I guess, Jalen Davis and Joe Bocci before free agency all began. Both of them got minimal, essentially vet minimum salaries. I guess Davis got a two-year deal, but those guys were retained before free agency began, along with Uncle Mike Thomas, who's the veteran safety that's been here for the past couple of years, special teams captain, depth piece at the position. He signed a one-year deal, and again, veteran minimum for a 32-33-year-old safety right before legal tampering began. And then, once legal tampering began, that's when a lot of stuff happened, started to happen around the league, and that's when we got our first signing for the Bengals as free agency opens, Anthony.
first signing. We can, first of all, I just want to show this. I know this doesn't have your name attached to it, but I pulled this up here, my friend. This is the article on Michael Thomas, and I will pin this for the live chat. I think I have this, at least I hope I have this correct here.
This is, yeah, nice.
Yes. Matthew Lennox, though, gets the credit, not you, good sir. But here is the A to Z Sports site talking about Michael J. Thomas. Michael J. Fox comes to mind every time I see that name there. But Michael J. Thomas re-signs. And if you remember too, John, he was a guy last year that as the team ended up, you know, losing in that AFC championship round, on the exit interviews, he was talking about how special this locker room was, the culture was, and all of that. So you kind of felt like if there was going to be an interest there, you know, from the Bengals, that he was probably going to come back. There's not going to be a ton of interest from a special teams guy, I wouldn't think. I mean, obviously people value what he does, and he's a great player for the role that he plays. You know, he was a guy that the Bengals just wanted to prioritize because they know him, they knew him, they loved him. You know, he was probably, if he was going to set to hit the free agent market, I don't know that he necessarily would have been a day one guy, I guess is my point. But a guy that is helping, that is helpful to the Bengals, and a guy that, you know, will provide some assistance to them in the special teams department.
Yeah, and the reason why they just did this before free agency happens, because like you said, Michael Thomas, is not garnering any outside interest at the current state of his career. He knows the team very well. They know him very well. Like, this was just, hey, come on back. We want you back. I'm not going to get anything else on the open market. But again, not an answer at safety at either position, just a guy that provides depth in emergency situations, and most importantly, veteran leadership and special teams experience.
Yep. Okay. So the reason why they made that signing is because, yes, he doesn't play a lot of defense for them. He's a special teams guy, but they need depth at safety, John. And we kind of felt like we knew. Let's start with kind of the predictable one, I guess. And that is, of course, that Jesse Bates leaves for the Atlanta Falcons on a big deal, 4-year, $64 million deal. So he got the bag, as they say, with the Falcons. And we kind of felt this one was coming because I think you and I talked about it a little bit on the show a few weeks back, where he was seen out with various Falcons players hitting the town. I think it was Kyle Pitts and others that he was hanging out with. And so he goes there and fortifies their defense, leaving a hole in the Bengals defense, but obviously one that we kind of felt he was going to be gone. We kind of knew this was going to be the situation.
I mean, this is just 2 years of, I don't know if you want to call it stress, definitely content for us though, just off our shoulders. Like, this is something that's been just inevitable for the past at least 18 months. I don't know, specifically with this team, like we talked about how Bates was having dinner with David Mulligetta, his agent, along with several other Falcons players, also represented by David Mulligetta. So there's been interest in here for quite some time before quote unquote legal tampering began. And that's just the base of how we got to this point. 4 years, $64 million, I believe half of that is fully guaranteed 2 years of the deal. So at least that average annual value and total guaranteed mark exceeds what the Bengals were probably ever offering in the first place. This puts him, I think, as the fourth highest paid safety in the league, slightly under what Derwin James got last year, what Jamal Adams got a couple of years ago. I don't think the NFL wanted to continue inflating the market at this position, but this fits in line to where we expected Bates to land somewhere else in the NFL that was on, you know, one of the 31 other teams.
This is kind of what this is what he sought. He sought top five money at the position. He sought the big money. We have seen over the last couple of years since he's been on this big kick to get a new contract extension, a lot of guys, Justin Simmons and others, getting, you know, Jamal Adams, you mentioned a couple of other names, big contract after big contract. So he kind of felt like this was, going to be something that he was going to get somewhere out there. And then as we saw that dinner or that get together that he had a couple of weeks ago with Falcons players and whatnot, obviously pointed to this eventual outcome. Here's the thing that, and we'll save kind of the good news for the end of the recap here, and then we'll talk about what may be ahead. We'll talk about some other players that are still potentially available. And then, of course, we want to take some questions from folks as well. So you can get those to us in a number of different live chats. You can text them to us. Or, of course, you know, YouTube Super Chat, all that kind of stuff. We will take those. Here you go right here, though, John. And I'm going to bring this one up. Von Bell going to Carolina. This was one that we felt, you know, the Bengals weren't going to maybe keep Jesse Bates. They weren't going to keep Jermaine Pratt. But Bell was kind of the guy you felt like he was that they could get as long as they offered him something competitive and or in the ballpark of what he wanted. You kind of felt like he was going to be the guy they were going to be able to retain through this whole thing. And so now Bengals are without both of their starting safeties. You know, kind of catching up on news and getting the show set. I did not see numbers on this quite yet. I don't believe.
They don't exist
know if
yet.
Those have been. Yeah, I don't think they've been divulged because I was kind of keeping an eye out for it. So, but regardless, I don't know if the Bengals were trying to get him on a deal that was a little more shorter term, maybe not as lucrative. Carolina, though, pounced and they got a good player there, a guy who's been really critical to their defensive success. That being the Bengals over the past couple of years.
Yeah, this comes down to, you know, was offered from the Bengals' end, and it could be similar to the offer that another player that the Bengals were targeting in free agency ended up signing before Von Bell jettisoned, or at least agreed to terms with Carolina. I think we agreed, we all kind of felt like it was slightly more than what he ended up signing for in 2020, so maybe the 7, 8, maybe $9 million per year range was about right for Von Bell. He's 28, entering his third contract in the NFL, but still relatively young for someone who's already been through two contract cycles. We'll have to see what it is. I don't imagine that the Bengals would have been out of the race if it was in that ballpark, but it could also just be the, you know, the Bengals had an offer set for two players, and it was like whichever takes this first, we're going to end up signing. Again, that's just speculation on my end, but that's kind of how things have been in the past with this team in regards to keeping maybe one player instead of both for a similar amount of money. So we'll have to see what the deal is. Again, this is all speculatory until we kind of know that, but it was pretty clear that Von Bell was the Bengals' biggest in-house priority, and no one really felt like he was going to end up out of the price range. So until we learn what that price was, we can only guess.
Yeah, I'm seeing someone say 4 years, $54 million in the chats here. I'm looking online. I'm not seeing that personally. I mean, I'm doing a quick search. I'm not seeing that that number out there, but we'll definitely keep it posted. I just hadn't seen official numbers on that or you know, somewhat official numbers, obviously, at this point. We know those can be a little fluid at this point in time. But so that is a little bit of the bad news with the Bengals there. Now, the good news is that they were able to sign a guy that it seemed like he was not going to be attainable at this point. If you were reading cryptic, this is why you can't read too much into cryptic tweets and social media posts and all that kind of stuff. So the Bengals were able to keep Jermaine Pratt in Cincinnati on a deal, John, that was pretty, you know, I don't want we got to see the full breakdown of the numbers, but a little bit more friendly average annual value, $7 million a year, 3 years, $21 million, I believe was the number there that was put out there. A little bit more team friendly than I think a lot of people imagined or thought that he would be getting out there. And, you know, I'll pull this one up here. And then I do want to, he put out some quotes recently, did Pratt about re-signing with the Bengals, but this one was a little bit of a surprise, especially with when you saw what Roquan Smith got out there. Tremaine Edmonds got a huge contract with the Bears. I forget the linebacker TJ who signed right before
Edwards.
Pratt did. TJ Edwards, thank you. That was kind of a market setter in a way. So this was kind of, you know, for the bummer that was Von Bell leaving for Carolina, and obviously Jesse Bates leaving for Atlanta. This was kind of the ray of sunshine, a little bit of the pleasant surprise type.
I mean, this kind of ended up being the reverse of what we expected, which is not unusual from a Bengals free agency standpoint. Like, I just think back all the way to 2020, right? You had DJ Reader signing the biggest free agent contract in team history, immediately matched with Trey Waynes signing a deal of similar magnitude. and you have Bengals fans kind of left in limbo of like equal amounts of happiness and confusion. And then 2021 comes around, they lose Carl Lawson to the Jets, and they immediately sign Trey Hendrickson right afterwards, and a lot of fans aren't necessarily on board with that immediately as well. And then last year you had, you know, Alex Kappa and Ted Karras signed immediately, but you had a huge hole at right tackle that they didn't fill for like a week. This kind of goes into that same trend, in my opinion, of just like, yeah, it's like par for the course for them right now, because while losing Von Bell is not great, especially because there was an expectation that he was going to be re-signed, bringing back Jermaine Pratt, there was just a lot of already discussion about what life was going to be like without Jermaine Pratt. Akeem Davis-Gaither or Marcus Bailey could step up, or maybe they signed another linebacker like a David Long to replace him. And it kind of got lost in the fact that Jermaine Pratt is a pretty damn good player who's ascending, who's still 27 years old. He fits all these, you know, boxes. He checks all these boxes that the Bengals look for in giving a second contract, and he fits the defense really well. And Lou Anarumo, the defense coordinator, is still here. So it's a great deal for them. 3 years, $21 million. I can't give away the contract details just yet. The cap it for this year is only going to be about $5 million for this season, which is a little bit lower compared to past Bengals extensions of similar magnitude. So this is a slightly cheaper deal compared to Bengals standards, but also compared to what we expect Pratt to get, which is why this whole conversation started about him leaving in the first place. It's significantly less than what we expected him to get anywhere else on the market. Like, I think it was unfortunate for him that TJ Edwards only signed for about $6.5 million per year. Quincy Williams, the guy for the Jets, signed for about $6 million per year. So the market is in a weird spot right now for linebackers, where you have Tremaine Edwards getting like $18 million per year, and, you know, it's just all over the place right now. So Jermaine Pratt, I think, saw the fact that the market for him is really, really saturated, not as lucrative as he expected. So he returned to the negotiating table, and hopefully, Anthony, this clears up potential confusion in the future about what his role is on third down. If there's any of those problems that arise after this deal, that's a big issue, because I don't know why Jermaine Pratt would take this deal if he has the same issues and concerns about his role in the defense.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's that facet to it. The other, on the positive side, you mentioned some of the names out there and their numbers being, that being Tremaine Edmonds, Roquan Smith, the numbers that they're getting, average annual value, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the thing with this that's kind of a beautiful thing, because the Bengals undoubtedly want to re-sign and extend Logan Wilson coming up. There is a distinct possibility with such disparity in some of these numbers and not these, you know, pass rushing edge outside linebacker types that the Bengals are looking to re-sign here, with such disparity in average annual value, with what Jermaine Pratt just signed and the disparity of numbers that you're seeing from Roquan Smith, et cetera, there is a distinct possibility that the Bengals will be able to re-sign Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson for an amount that is at or less than some of the average annual values that a Tremaine Edmonds or a Roquan Smith are getting. And you're getting two quality players at that point to be able to, you know, get that number there. So that's where not only was this news welcome, but the contract numbers as we currently know them was welcome news, because that gives the Bengals a little bit of flexibility. I want to get your thoughts on that, but I just want to say this as well. You can see here, we're close. I want to win. And he talks about potentially taking, and this is from Bengals.com, potentially taking some form of a pay cut or less money or whatever. quote, we're one play away, so why wouldn't you want to stay? We're close. It was a fact. I want to win. I'm big on loyalty. They gave me an opportunity when I got in the league, so why would I try to leave for a team that wasn't as successful for more money? I didn't feel right about that. That's got to be music to Bengals fans' ears right there. That he, you know, saying that he could have had a different opportunity potentially for more money and whatnot, did not take it. He stayed in Cincinnati because the ability to win is here. So that is in itself big, big news and a big change for the Bengals there.
Well, again, it goes, and I guess this is the point of just not reading in too much to things that we don't know the full context of, but it seemed like he was just on his way out because he just felt like he needed to move on and find an opportunity elsewhere where maybe he can get utilized more. So to hear him say that, it could just be, you know, I'm coming back and this is the best deal that I can get. I'm going to make the most of it. Or it could just be an understanding of what his role is now, what it's going to be going forward. But obviously, like, I believe him in his sentiment that he likes being here. Like, I've never once doubted that. Like, his relationship with Lou Anarumo, his relationship with the players, obviously his best friend in the whole world, BJ Hill, is on the team, who might now have to shave his head because he lost a bet on Twitter. So I understand all those things. It just seemed like the opportunity to develop into the full player that he wanted to be, it didn't seem like it was going to be here, because the role that he wanted is probably the role that Logan Wilson has right now. But that is a good point, man. The idea, the possibility that they could keep this linebacker tandem for the long term, it's definitely more likely now that Pratt is under contract with this type of deal. And I know people were in love with the tandem of Bates and Bell at safety. It was a dream that that could be still alive, but this tandem at linebacker is almost just as important with the foundation and the structure of this defense. The fact that they asked both of Pratt and Wilson to do so many different things on just a weekly basis, like, it's very valuable to have that continuity. Even if linebacker in the most valuable position on the defensive side of the ball, it's pretty critical with what Lou Anarumo asks his linebackers to do. And I think also, yes, there's concern about what the safety position is right now for the Bengals, and I don't expect them to enter the draft with just Dax Hill and Tyson Anderson and Michael Thomas at the position. Like, they're going to address it at some point in free agency. But you also have some confidence that there's a position that needs to survive quick turnover or roster turnover in general, and to get guys up to speed. You're pretty confident in Lou Anarumo just taking on new guys in the secondary and catching them up to speed compared to maybe other positions in the defense, just because that's his forte, right? That's where he's had the most success in developing players. And I think the Bengals kind of realized that. And this is just how this has gone. And they're going to have to go to contingency plans at safety, because I don't think that for one second that they're going to enter the draft with just Dax Hill at safety starting.
They will not, and we've said this on many episodes leading up to this one, and we've got a lot of live viewers. This is awesome across multiple platforms, so good to see everyone here. It's good to see the passion with free agency and the Bengals this year, and appreciate you stopping by. So we may have some new people that did not hear us talking about this on past episodes, but John, I mean, the thing is the Bengals do not like to go into the draft with major glaring needs. They like to feel that they've at least got placeholders, even if they're short-term starting options, that they can feel comfortable with going into the draft, so that they can maybe draft someone who's more of a long-term project, a development guy, that sort of thing. But here's the other flip side of this that a lot of people that are and we'll get to some questions here in just a few minutes. But here's the thing that I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot of people kind of needing to be talked off the ledge here. And it's ironic that if you've known me and followed me on Twitter for any period of time during free agency, you probably would have been laughing at the fact that I'm trying to give this kind of advice. But here's the thing, though. When you are a good team, when you have developed good players, when you have already done some things in free agency in recent years to bring in productive guys, you're going to have to make tough decisions. You're going to have to kind of play a war of attrition where you're saying, I'm going to keep this guy. We're going to keep this guy and work on extending X, Y, and Z in house, even though they're not a free agent yet. And to do that, we have to have some of these guys be expendable. And that's the unfortunate reality the Cincinnati Bengals are facing right now, is that they've drafted pretty well in the Zach Taylor era and developed guys well. They have big contracts on the horizon with people in-house that are incredibly important players that are currently under contract, and those are coming up soon. And then, of course, you know, they've also brought in other free agents that, you know, maybe their contracts have already expired, like a Von Bell, that sort of thing. And they've just been forced to say, hey, you know, we've got other things we need to do. And, you know, for the short term, things are going to be a little bit more uncomfortable than we would like in terms of positional depth, who's going to start, et cetera. But I do not believe that the Bengals are going to go into the draft with, as you said, the safety position currently comprised as it is.
And I think you have to think back to why Von Bell found himself in Cincinnati in the first place. He was not a wave one free agency signing. He was actually the opposite. Nope. He was like wave six. He was on the market for way too long for someone who's 25 years old and a really good player in the NFL. The Bengals got him much lower than they expected to. They probably had him, you know, projected and rated much higher on the open market, so they didn't even think they had a chance at him. But he found himself available for, again, over a week's time in free agency, and they said to themselves, if no one's going to take this guy, we might as well take him for the cheap, right, and just reap the benefits. And that's exactly what they did. The Bengals got Von Bell in the building because they stuck to their principles. And that's typically what they do in free agency. They don't overextend themselves and, you know, create as much wiggle room in the negotiating room as possible. Now, I thought that they could do that with Von Bell. If there's any in-house free agent that they had this year, that they would have maybe given a little bit more to Von Bell to make sure that he stayed. But maybe the Panthers just offered him a lot more than what the Bengals were willing to. Or the Bengals just stood pat, right? And Von Bell was entering the third contract of his career. Bengals have pretty much stayed away from those guys. There's the failures of Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap on their third deals. That's just who they are right now. And I feel like there should be a level of trust that they're going to continue doing that, and they're going to continue finding value. And maybe right away it doesn't look like an upgrade, or it doesn't look like they sustain the level of ability at the position. But even if they had the cap space to bring back both Pratt and Bell, I don't think they were ever going to completely overextend themselves to bring back both. So the fact that they got one for a really good price, and they're still in the market for a pretty capable safety that can bring the same level of production as Bell. It could be a Taylor Rapp. It could be any one of these guys like Juan Thornhill, Julian Love, who I think has experience playing under Lou Anarumo with the New York Giants. It could be any one of these guys that brings that similar level of play to Bell, who's even younger and is probably going to make a little bit less this year.
Yeah, so a lot of people are asking about Gardner Johnson, the safety out of Philadelphia. There's some stuff going on Twitter where Bengals players, I think it was Zachary Carter and who else was chiming in there. Someone was talking about it with him, and he, you know, are you going to come here? And there was kind of some back and forth that generated some buzz here. That's a guy whose name is out there, but how do you see that being a fit? Personally, I think some of the other names you just mentioned, the Taylor Rapps and whatnot, are probably more in the realm of possibility than Gardner Johnson. That's just from where I sit, especially when you look at, again, the positions and the numbers the Bengals are willing to pay certain position groups. They just do not value safety as high as other positions. And so I don't know that they're going to go let two safeties walk because of money. I guess disagreements is a good word for it. And so, you know, go out there and pay, you know, a decent chunk of change there, but they, who knows, now that they don't have either of them, maybe they may be more inclined to do so.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think them losing both Bell and Bates is going to prompt them to go out and get the next highest paid safety. And that's where Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is interesting to me, because he could just be this year's Von Bell, where he's expecting a lucrative offer. And I believe the Eagles have an offer for him. So it's not the exact same situation, right? The Saints didn't want to bring back Von Bell. They already kind of moved on. I think the Eagles are still very much in the running for him, but it's been weird with him ever since he got into the league. He was a fourth-round pick when a lot of people rated him as a first-round talent, and then he couldn't strike a deal with the Saints, so the Saints traded him to the Eagles. The Eagles gave up draft capital to have him, but just for 1 year. They didn't immediately extend him. He had that one incident where he, like, ripped a guy's mouthpiece out of his face, and then he got punched in the middle of an NFL field. There's always been this weird feistiness and aura that comes with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And I don't know if that's going to end up having teams shy away from him, but all I know is that he's not signed right now, and he should be deserved to be paid pretty handsomely. If he is paid handsomely, I don't expect the Bengals to do that, but if he finds himself out on the market for longer than he's expected to, and his price just naturally decreases, I could see the Bengals entering the equation then. But until then, guys like Julian Love, Taylor Rapp, much more likely, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think our guy Malik Wright, also a pretty reliable source guy for the Bengals in free agency and whatnot, kind of said that he's not really Gardner Johnson, not really in the conversations in-house for the Bengals at the moment, at least as of earlier on Monday. So we'll see what happens there. But another guy that the Bengals were reportedly interested in, Obo Okoronkwo, if I'm saying his name correctly.
Double O.
He signed, yeah. He signed a 3-year, $19 million deal, reportedly. He's an edge player with the Browns, of all people. And then Patrick Peterson made some waves talking to Adam Schefter on his podcast, saying, is there a team that comes to the top of his mind that he would like to sign with? He mentions the Bengals, and what the hell does he do? He goes and he signs with the Steelers. So go figure that one out. A couple of other guys out here. Chase Winovich, the edge player, he's expected to sign with the Texans. Robert Woods also signed there. Big news. And this is just crazy for the Chiefs. They signed Juwan Taylor, a guy we profiled on the show a couple weeks ago, to a big, big contract. I think upwards of $80 million to be their right tackle. They have yet to agree, I think, as of this point, with Orlando Brown. There was talks about maybe them getting involved in a Laremy Tunsil trade as well. So the Chiefs are really trying to do absolutely everything to load up that offensive line, figure things out up there. Juwan Taylor, of course, a really good pass protector, not so solid in the run game, but that doesn't seem to matter very much in Kansas City when you have Patrick Mahomes in the offense that they run. So they want the pass protector there. They get him. Big, big deal there. So he's off the market. Mike McGlinchey signs with the Denver Broncos, for those people kind of clamoring for him as a right tackle option. And so there's been some notable moves around the league, and guys that Bengals players or Bengals fans have kind of been keeping an eye on have slowly gone to differing places.
I don't understand the Juwan Taylor contract at all. Like, I get it that these guys end up making a lot more than what they're projected to, and that's just the, like, we talked about Juwan Taylor for like 16, 17 at most per year, and he gets 20 from the Chiefs. And I understand, like, the Chiefs are aggressive. You know, they made Joe Tooney at the time like one of the highest paid guards, maybe the highest paid guard. And I get it. Like, you know, he's a fine replacement for one of the Chiefs tackles. To move him to left tackle, though, like, he played like a couple hundred snaps at left tackle at Florida, but he was a right tackle then. He's been a right tackle for 4 years for Jacksonville. To move him to left tackle is just very bizarre to me. And I get it. You'll have Chiefs fans. They moved Orlando Brown from right to left tackle. Orlando Brown at least played left tackle at Oklahoma. I think this is a huge risk for moving a guy who's been really a career right tackle to the other side of the line. It's the exact opposite of what we've been preaching with Jonah Williams, right? It's probably not in his best interest to move positions, to move on the complete opposite side of the formation, to completely mess up his technique. I guess the Chiefs are confident that Juwan Taylor can do that, but, man, I would not commit $60 million to that experiment, though.
So they're committing to him playing left tackle for him?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I didn't catch that part. Yeah, so, okay. Because I had heard they were, trying to still figure out things with Orlando Brown, maybe getting in on a Laremy Tunsil trade to do the left side of that line. So yeah, then that would, that obviously makes a big risk there. They've shored up that offensive line in the last couple of years. And now the Bengals are, there's some things they need to figure out. They need to figure out interior defensive line. They need to figure out obviously safety now. And they need to ink some of these extensions that they are looking to get into. So we're going to take a couple more questions here. We've got a lot of live listeners. This is awesome. Appreciate all the support, the live listeners. If you're new here, this is the Orange and Black Insider, part of the Cincy Jungle Podcast Network. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. And we are able to be, you can subscribe to this show on our YouTube channel right underneath that Cincy Jungle SB Nation icon there. There's a show icon. Click that. Click subscribe. Click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available. You can also get it on your favorite audio streamer, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, along with other great Bengals podcasts that we have on our channel. Leave us a review there if you can. And then, of course, you can give a thumbs up to the Cincy Jungle Facebook page for the live streams there so we can you know, you can find all the stuff there. So appreciate it. It's good to see a lot of new faces, a lot of new names, and hopefully you stick around. Hopefully you subscribe. We appreciate it. Okay. So let's talk. I saw a super chat up here. I think it was from Mr. Generosity, AKA Mr. Whisper. I'll have to find that one there. Do you see any, we should start, cranking through here, John, while I find this other one. We've got a lot of comments to sort through. Wow.
Yeah. There was a rumor regarding the running back position. I love you, Jacob. Burr emoji is asking, do you think the Bengals will cut Joe Mixon and get Jamal Williams?
That's a good one.
I'm not counting out Jamal Williams as a Bengals target because that just makes a lot of sense. Again, second contract, or I guess technically third contract, but it was just on a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal with the Lions in the past couple of years or whatever. But still pretty young, I think, as a runner, like fits what the Bengals probably want between the tackles and a lot less tread on the tire or more tread. Is it more tread or less tread when you're talking about someone who's young?
I guess you would say there is more tread on the tire. Technically,
there's more tread on the tire.
That would give you more traction, you know, less wear and tear on the tire.
I've been shooting from the hip with that phrase, like not knowing if I'm saying it right.
We've been saying it wrong for years.
Yeah. Williams is fresher, I would say, than Mixon. He's a better pass protector. He's not as explosive as a runner, maybe, but I think he's just a reliable between the tackles guy that unfortunately Joe Mixon hasn't been. It makes sense. I don't foresee Mixon getting cut until they feel like they need to do so. We've seen that in the past with like Geno Atkins. He was a sure cap casualty in 2021, but he didn't get released until the Bengals needed that cap space, I think, to sign like Riley Reiff or whatever. So I don't think Mixon is gone until it's deemed necessary for him to be gone.
Mr. Whisper says, okay, well, does the loss of both starting safeties make safety the number one priority in this draft? Possibly corner, maybe swing guy, something like that. I mean, again, we talked about it. The Bengals don't like to go into the draft with like glaring needs. So I think in a couple of days here, we may be singing a completely different tune about that position group. In terms of who they bring in, who they don't bring in. And, you know, again, what a lot of people aren't realizing, just because, again, with the frenzy that we're dealing with, there are still there are guys that get signed post-draft because teams don't get guys that they deem that they wanted in the class, and or, John, post-June 1 cuts because guys stack their rosters either through free agency and or the draft, and they have to shed off some old deals that they have on the contracts for guys that could be valuable short-term valuable players on short-term contracts.
Yeah, I don't foresee the Bengals entering the draft without signing a safety, which would take, I think, safety off the table or an early draft pick for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know a lot of people are uneasy about Dax Hill playing safety. He was a first-round pick for a reason.
He's going to
highly touted player for. He's going to be. I mean, at some point, he's a first-round pick. You got to see if the guy can play. Right.
Yeah.
He flashed it at a couple points last year, and you know, it was late in the year. So hopefully, you know, he can transition and use that athleticism. If you remember, Jesse Bates had to start as a rookie because of the state of the Bengals roster, and everybody was fine with that. But now, because you had Bates, you had Bell, nobody's really fine with Dax Hill because, oh, he hasn't played very many snaps. Well, he's a first round pick. You got to see what you got out of him, especially when you lose these two guys. So, I mean, as of right now, you would assume it's going to be Hill and someone else that they bring in at the safety positions there. And I just don't see, especially with how they have not valued the safety position overall, I just do not see how, you know, that's a first round pick again for the second year in a row. I do see corner potentially, maybe if one of those, you know, interior defensive linemen come in there. By the way, Javon Hargrave got paid today as an interior defensive tackle with pass rushing ability. So at any rate, those are kind of where I see here. You see, we've got a couple of other super chats. Thank you so much. Oh boy. Okay. David. And I believe David was the gentleman who was giving out the information, some numbers on the Von Bell contract. So we'll work on confirming that there, but what do the Bengals have to do to get Laremy Tunsil? Can they add Jonah Williams on a trade for him? I mean, I would assume that would maybe be part of the compensation at that point, but I mean, this is a gigantic, talking about Tunsil, a gigantic salary cap albatross that you are taking on. What was it, about 30 million cap hit, I want to say. So that is a gigantic, and he's a hell of a player. There's no doubt about it. But that is a gigantic thing to take on when you're looking at doing a mega deal for your franchise quarterback, when you're looking at doing a sizable deal for one, if not both, of your wide receivers coming up here. You would need to not only take him on, but then I would assume, you know, restructure and extend and spread that cap hit out. I just do not see that as a viable situation for the Bengals.
I'm really sorry you paid $20 to ask this question, but no, like, it's just not, it's not happening. Like, the Bengals would have to extend him. He'd be, I guess, 30 years old next year. He'd want something that's even more lucrative than it is now, than what he's being paid now. And that's completely out of where the Bengals feel comfortable paying for an offensive lineman. I don't care what happened last year. Like, there's a reason why they've never gone after a guy like Laremy Tunsil. If he was on an affordable deal and he was just trying to, you know, fight his way out of his current situation, then yeah. But he's not on an affordable deal. The next deal that he gets is not going to be affordable for the Bengals. No, this is not happening.
Did you mention, you know, going back a second to the safety, did you mention Epps as a guy, Marcus Epps as a guy that was an option? Because it looks like it looks like he's potentially joining the Raiders. If you had mentioned him, that was kind of some recent news here. But thank you. Yeah, I mean, again, I think the Bengals are going to stick with Jonah Williams, provided he's healthy. The procedure he had. And our buddy Will, who listens to the show, kind of relayed this info to us while we were talking about it last week. But, you know, there's a procedure done on the knee that he had, the dislocated kneecap. I think the later dislocated kneecap, to hopefully keep it more secured in place, so that's not going to be hopefully a lingering issue. But they're going to at least let this year ride out with Jonah Williams, I would think, at left tackle, and then, you know, kind of figure things out, probably get another tackle or two in the draft here. There are, I want to pull up the list of some available guys, but like I said, Taylor's off the market. McGlinchey's off the market. The kid from the Raiders, Illuminor, I don't know how to say his last name. He's an intriguing guy. I don't think he's been scooped up yet. And then, of course, I don't think there's been movement on Orlando Brown, who wants a mega deal either at this point. So the Bengals need some long-term help. Again, if they're not going to spend or be willing to take on a $30 million cap hit of a Laremy Tunsil, some of these other guys may not make sense either in a lot of different respects. So we will we'll see. But we've got other – thank you, David, for the super chat there and the question. Joe here submitted one. Which positions do you expect them to look for in free agent this week or next? I agree, they don't like gaps going into the draft. What do they need to sign to stick to that plan? I think it would be safety now is becoming a pretty pressing need. I do think they will sign one free agent tight end, but I think they're going to probably go into the draft pretty heavily at that position as well, because they've met with like six people that we know of during the combine that were tight ends. So they'll probably go pretty heavy there. They did not tender Mitchell Wilcox, which is a bit of a surprise. We don't know the future with Hayden Hurst here either. So I think a free agent's probably going to be added there. They may double dip in the draft at tight end as well. So I think tight end's probably on the list there. And then, you know, if there's an interior defensive lineman that makes sense, John, I think those are probably where the next steps are.
Yeah, safety, offensive tackle, potentially tight end, running back. I just realized, because he said in the chat, David Rasul goes to my gym. We've chopped it up multiple times. So shout out, David. I'm sorry. Sorry for answering that question like that. I'm sorry, my man, but thank you for the donation. Thank you for the question, man. I don't go to the gym at like noon anymore, unfortunately, because of my job. But if you ever go at night, hit me up.
Okay. So you know from the gym. You know from the gym.
I do. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I like it. I do think, and I'm not the most patient person in general, and haven't been the most patient person overall with the Bengals and their free agency approach over the years. But I do think that this is a year where we need to be a little bit more patient. The most we thought they were going to be more inwardly focused this year. And you know, I do think some of these moves though, Yvonne Bell leaving and whatnot, when maybe you didn't expect that, it does press their hand a little bit more. But safety, tight end, and then I would think, you know, maybe offensive tackle there. I think that's going to be a little bit of a waiting game to see how that all plays out for them, and or the draft. And then I do think safety, tight end, and interior defensive line have to be at the top priorities there for the Bengals right now. Mr. Whisper, again, did we already we kind of talked about this here, not counting safeties. What's your guess on who the Bengals could be looking at right now after the events of day one? Specific names, John. Let's try and get a little more specific in terms to play off of the last question and into Mr. Whispers if we can.
I don't know, man. I feel like offensive tackle is always going to be the spot where they were going to be the least comfortable with before the events of free agency. Now, obviously, safety kind of changes that dynamic, but I feel like the situation at tackle is still what it is because they haven't addressed it. They were never going to be in the discussions of what McGlinchey and Juwan Taylor got. They're not going to be involved in the Orlando Brown sweepstakes. Illuminor, I don't know what he's going to get. I think it's going to be more than what like PFF predicted him. Like, he's going to get more than just $3 million per year, especially with, you know, what these what these contracts at offensive tackle are going right now. I've always said that Cam Fleming, though, is a likely target just based off of the fact that he played under Frank Pollock before when he was with Dallas. He has experience at both tackle spots. He's probably okay with being just the week one or through week eight starter until L. Collins comes back. I think George Fant and Kelvin Beachum kind of fit that mold, too. I think both of those guys also played under Pollock when they were with the New York Jets, or I might be wrong with Beachum in that case, but those guys in that tier are always have always been the targets for me in terms of what I've expected. But I still think offensive tackle is going to be something that they look at.
This list I'm looking at, I don't know if it's been fully updated, but I don't know that there's been movement on Isaiah Wynn right now, right? I'd have to look.
No.
Caleb McGarry was not franchise tendered for Atlanta, and they just spent big money at safety. So he's a guy that might be on Wynn's only 26. McGarry's 28. And then you can say, well, you know, if you're talking about someone who's a placeholder because they are committed, it depends on their mindset, right? If you're looking at someone who is committed, if they're committed to Lael Collins and are looking just for a placeholder to, you know, play the first part of the season, maybe as he's on PUP or what have you, you know, you could look at a Taylor Lewan, you could look at a Donovan Smith, you know, guys who have been kind of shed right before free agency there as possible, just kind of placeholder guys. I don't know that they, you know, a guy like Taylor Lewan, I don't know that he would, you know, go for that necessarily, even though he's had a lot of time missed in his career, especially recently. So, I mean, there are names out here. Illuminor is a guy who's probably the most intriguing, I think, as a guy that you would say, okay, possible upgrade from what the Bengals had last year, maybe somewhat affordable and, you know, still out there. He is 28 years old, though, as well. Hey, did you know Cedric Abuehi's available, John? Cedric Abuehi's out there and available if you wanted to go there.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that.
there's really a lot of guys who have been sort of, you know, backup type of players right now. Again, Orlando Brown kind of topping the list at tackle that's available right now. But those are some of the names right now that the Bengals may or may not be looking at. We had another super chat that I'm trying to find here.
Some Joe. He's asking, okay, which positions do you expect them to look for at free agency this week or next week? I mean, we've more or less kind of covered that
one. Yeah. We did that one. David, we got to his. Okay. So the super chats definitely take precedence. If you want to get your questions read, try and sneak that in here. We'll try and get to a couple of others.
Mark's been pretty active. He's asking about John, who was cut or is going to be cut by the Cleveland Browns, I believe, when the new league year starts. So that's not official yet. They can't do anything with that, but it would make some sense. Like, I believe he played under, or he didn't play under Zach Taylor. He was with the Rams when Zach Taylor was there, but he was coaching the other side of the ball. Obviously, experience with the AFC North might be a little, again, like I'm, whenever there's a guy who's in his late 20s and is entering his third or fourth contract, I typically don't, like, circle them or highlight them just because, again, like, there's no reason to expect that at this point unless it's for like a 1-year deal, right? Unless it's like a Riley Reiff type situation. I don't foresee that at safety, though. I don't think they're going to try to get a guy on a one-year at that position. So I'm not sure if John Johnson or a guy like that would be in their plans. Also, like Adam Thielen, who I believe someone else mentioned. No, probably not.
No. So you look here. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of questions on safeties. Jordan Poyers, I think he's still available out there, 31 years old. You've got Jimmy Ward, 31 years old. Adrian Amos is a guy, kind of interesting player out there. Clayton Fedulum's a free agent. Someone had texted me saying the Bengals were connected to Terrell Edmonds. I did research on that. I couldn't find too much on that. Of course, the safety out of Pittsburgh, former first round pick. He's kind of had an up and down career, to say the least. Definitely didn't start great. I think he's kind of played a little bit better of late. So that may be a name to look out for as well at 26 years old. There's others out there as well, but it's kind of, you know, at this point, it's kind of guys who were big names that are older. There's an issue that they weren't immediately signed, right? I mean, there's one issue or another that teams perceive that allow them to keep being available at this point in time.
Pretty much, man. I mean, free agency has kind of evolved in my mind over recent years because the Bengals kind of did this last year where they immediately targeted not guys that you would expected right off the bat. Like, they identified, I guess, in a lot of people's minds, mid-tier, wave two, wave three guys immediately, got them at good price points, and succeeded in free agency in that way. And that's what I think a lot of other teams have started doing now. Like, you will have guys who expected to be signed immediately because you tend to think, like, okay, the first guys who sign are going to be the ones who sign the biggest deals that have the most interest. That's not always how it works now. And I think that's why I expected the Bengals, before Wednesday comes around, to sign one guy from, you know, external free agency, and that could still happen. But, like, that's just kind of how it's evolved at this point. Like, teams are kind of standing up for certain positions and not trying to inflate certain markets and whatnot. It's led to, you know, guys who are not the most highly coveted names, you know, signing before guys who end up signing the biggest deals. And that's how free agency has kind of evolved in recent years, and the Bengals have been part of that.
Doing one last scour here for some recent news on the Bengals. Looks like it's going a little quieter here as we go later into the evening, getting close to 8 p.m. Eastern here, and we're going to start closing up here. There was an interesting comment made here by Brandon. It says Bengals cut Lael Collins. Bengals can get him. I think what he meant to say was that the Cowboys cut Lael Collins. I think that was shortly before or during free agency last year, if I remember correctly. The Bengals got him a few days into free agency.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting point because now these teams, I mentioned, you know, post-draft pickups and post-June 1st cuts and that sort of thing. There are guys that are going to start hitting the market now that could be valuable players that are not currently available or currently being sought out because these teams are now agreeing to new players coming in, new contracts coming in. And so now you could have an additional smaller, you know, not a huge influx, but there could be a small influx of some desirable players that were not currently set to be free agents that become them because of contracts that are being agreed to as of today. So that's an interesting point and an interesting path for people to keep in mind too, as it comes with the Bengals, because they like to go down that path, and get some of these players who have been on the discard pile.
Yeah. Before we end up logging off here, Jermaine Pratt's contract details have been revealed per overthecap.com, and it's aligned with some of the information that I got earlier today. I know a lot of people only care about the cap hits, so I will read that now. His salary cap charge for this upcoming season is $5.4 million, and that increases to $6.9 million in 2024 and then $7.9 million in 2025. So it's, again, a three-year, a little over $20 million in full total value, but the signing bonus of $7 million is the only guaranteed money in this contract. And
I believe I've got it here. Let me see if I can pull it up for you.
And as I mentioned, the cap hits, they start relatively small and they increasingly increase as the life of the deal increases. So again, much smaller in value compared to what I think a lot of people expected Jermaine Pratt to get. But in terms of just this year, Bengals had like 35-ish million in cap space entering today, and now they're down to about 30 after Jermaine Pratt signed.
This looks akin to what you're saying here, right? Yeah, 23, 24, 25, yep. Your cap number there. Yeah. So there it is right there. And again, you look at the number there, 20 million 220 is, and some change is the cap number for that 3-year deal. Again, pretty manageable for the Bengals. And now, John, that's, you know, we talked about who the Bengals could potentially be looking at or what they may be doing here in the next couple of days. Again, if they did have Von Bell in a specific contract in their heads, maybe they had this one also in their heads. You know, there is an opportunity now with a little bit of money, I guess, quote unquote, freed up by not having a Von Bell in the fold that you may have expected. So they may be able to use that money elsewhere for another safety, for a tackle, for an interior, you know, interior defensive lineman, tight end, or some combination of that.
Yeah, if you want to go by traditional Bengals rules, whatever cap space they have right now, just subtract $10 million from it. That's probably what they have to with for the rest of free agency, right? So 15 to $20 million in terms of just space right now, and that doesn't include whatever savings they can get from releasing Joe Mixon. Still ample room for them to make a handful of moves here. And again, like that deal compared to who Pratt is, compared to what his impact is, obviously compared to his popularity with the fan base, I think it's a great value signing, and it definitely favorable. Makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, favorable for sure. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for your questions. Thank you for tuning in. We've had a lot of live viewers. This has been awesome through a number of different platforms. We'll keep coming with more updates. John and I will be back with another show Wednesday night, kind of recapping some things and whatnot, but we're going to keep hammering you with content, talking free agency, the Bengals, and whatnot. Again, if you can, subscribe to our YouTube channel right underneath John there. We appreciate the support. And, of course, subscribe to the Cincy Jungle podcast channel on your favorite audio streamer. Keep it to cincyjungle.com and go check out John's work over at A to Z Sports as well to get the latest Bengals news, breakdowns, opinions, podcasts, all of it. Appreciate it. Thank you. Guys, John, thank you. It's been a busy day, but appreciate you making time for the show and breaking things down with your knowledge as always, my friend.
I think I need a much needed shower, man.
I hear you. Yeah, I was going to say maybe a beer too, but I think I'm going to hold off on that till later in the week. Yeah. I think that's going to be later in the week. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon.